Welcome back to the Kicks and Picks podcast. The whole crew is here this week, and last week I know we were split up. Scotty, Nick, and I are here, and we have Michael Scott of the Barbarian Football Works and Barbarian Podcast Works on the SB Nation, which you guys know I do some Rumble work for as well. He is here to help us preview the Bundesliga. It's a league that we dabble in when we take our picks week to week, but we brought in a true expert to help us break down the league. So, Michael, how are you tonight? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good, guys. How are y'all doing? Thanks for having me on here.
Good, man. Yeah. Excited to dive in here. Ready for week one. I can't.
Absolutely.
Like I'm so used to Italy and England being like the last leagues to start up. And it's like, wait a minute, hold on. We got a whole weekend. We can talk about it.
I do love the Bundesliga because I feel like it's, you know, as someone who pays attention casually, like I'm not in it every single week, but you always check the table and there's almost always a little bit of a surprise team that's just somehow found its way towards the top. And you expect like, you know, the Bayern and the Dortmunds and whatever, but every year there's just this new team that comes from seemingly nowhere and has a great run and either challenges or gets into the Champions League. And then you get to look forward to playing them if you're a team that has Champions League in the following season. So I'm really excited to like learn a little bit more about the league itself coming into this season, just so I know what I can expect and what to look out for.
Yeah, and I know those surprise teams the last 2 years have been good to me. I know when we were doing our locks, I bet on Union a lot 2 years ago, Stuttgart a lot last year. I'm curious to see what Michael has to say about maybe a potential another side that has some value going throughout the season. So, Michael, let's start just a quick flashback to last season because it was such a story. Bayer Leverkusen, they were just a machine last year until they ran into Atalanta in the Europa League final. I mean, my Roma played them 2 years in a row. Fortunate to beat them 2 years ago. They got kind of a lesson in football last year from that Leverkusen side. So what made them so good last year? And can they kind of carry that into this year now?
Yeah, you know, they kind of made a bit of a, felt like a Cinderella Sweet 16 type run where they just had the magic going. And, you know, the one thing that they had going for them was late in games. It just came out of nowhere. And they had 12 different games where they either were down and found a draw or were tied and found a win in the 85th minute or later. So out of, you know, 45, 50 games, that's a quarter of their games where it just happened. And it almost became laughable at the end of the season of like, you just knew it was going to happen. And it just happened again last week in the Super Cup where they were down and, you know, oh man, what's going to happen? They have the red card and they find a goal and it's just magical. And every time they'd get over to Xavi Alonso and be like, and he'd just be sitting there like, yep, that happened anyways. It's not like we played good soccer, but we won. And so, you know, really the question on the table is, can they do it again? And, you know, the short answer is absolutely not. There's no way. And I would say that even if it was Bayern Munich or Man City or Real Madrid, there's no way you can redo that kind of run because it was so magical and so special and everything went right. And that's not repeatable, certainly not with the same group of people, let alone another team and another league anywhere doing that. You know, that never even happens in, say, the Dutch league or the Scottish league where, like, it's only a one or two team race.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to do that. And then now you're going to throw on, okay, well, we were in the Europa League last year. Now we're going to go to the Champions League and try to replicate that same thing. There's no way. You have other priorities. You're going to spread it out. And, you know, quite frankly, they don't have the squad depth to really be able to fully compete in all three leagues at the same time at the way that you would want them to. And not to mention, they had quite a few players that still played in the Euros this year. So everybody's tired. It seems so unlikely. And they also start the season with about five games that are against top half of the table. So I don't think they're even going to make it out of September, let alone maybe even August with getting an undefeated streak going. And honestly, I think for them, it'll be a bit of a relief. But they'll say, okay, the streak's over. We don't need to win again. Let's start a new streak and they can kind of get back in gear.
Yeah, you always see those teams that,
sorry, coach, like the stat that you just gave me about comeback wins and comeback draw, like that blew my mind. Obviously, you know that there's going to be a little bit of that in a 34 game season where you don't lose a game, but that's like mind blowing even to reflect on today. 28 wins, 6 draws. That's nuts. So I'm sorry. How many games did you say they're starting off with? Like rough schedule. The last point you just made, I forgot the exact number of games you said.
Sure. It's like the first five games are against teams against the top half of the table.
Okay.
Which basically is August a couple, and then there's a break a little in September. So basically the first 2 months of the season, August to September, they're going to have a rough run. They got to deal with Bayern. They have to deal with Leipzig, who both teams really gave them trouble last year, besides the one Bayern game we don't want to talk about. But Leipzig really is a good matchup for them, and I'd be shocked if Leipzig doesn't take points off of them, if not get the win.
Okay, so really here's what I want to throw out to you guys. Over under 1.5 losses by the end of October.
October. Ooh. Oh, October, absolutely September. Over.
What are we in? I'm sorry, it's August. By the end of September. Sorry, I'm all messed up.
I'm going to say that they have more than 2 losses by the end of September. I don't see how they could possibly get through it, because they have to go to Gladbach this Friday, which honestly is not a freebie. It's kind of a kick in the teeth for being the winners. Then they get Leipzig at home, at Hoffenheim. Should win, but again, road atmosphere. Enough. And then on the last game of September, they play at Bayern. I don't see how they can run through the way they currently are. Now, I think they'll get past that game and then get on a bit of a run going into Christmas, where it's a little bit of an easier schedule. They get Stuttgart at home. The next real challenge is Dortmund away, which is like January 11th. So that's way out in the future. So, you know, people are like, oh man, they're not the same team. They're not going to do the same things. Then they're going to catch fire in October and November. One, because they have an easier schedule, and two, because they're like, man, I do not like losing to the other red teams of Bayern and Leipzig, and they're going to go on a tear. So then it's like, oh yeah, now they're actually good. I remember then people are going to watch them in Champions League, where I think they'll do pretty well during the group stage, depending on how that scheduling works out. But, you know, the first 5 games, I think they come back with 2 losses. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough run of matches. It's similar to what I saw Arsenal's schedule look like in the Premier League, where they've got that tough run of matches with City and Spurs and a couple others. And it kind of turns into like a relief after that, like you said. Like, then you can get on that run, which I think will keep them, obviously, in a very competitive position throughout the season, because you get Bayern out of the way early. But how much do you think that Bayern match, the fifth match into the season, kind of sets the tone for those two sides, with Bayern trying to get back to the throne that they've had for so long, and then Leverkusen was the upstart kind of side that took them off it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because keep in mind, Bayern finished third last year. They didn't even finish second. Yeah. And the weird part is in 2024, Bayern had, I think it was 72 points. And then the previous season, they had 71 points, but won the league. Mm. So they actually scored more points, and people were angry, and Tuchel left. Like, it was a whole thing, right? And so perspective is a little bit of much of like Leverkusen really just set everything on fire. So I think to answer your question about that specific game, it's not necessarily the result that really changes everything. It's how it gets played. Because the game that was in February or March, I mean, Leverkusen just put them to shame. They did everything they wanted to. Bayern looked exhausted. They looked like they were all like 35 years old playing a bunch of 23-year-olds. Leverkusen did whatever they wanted to all over the field. Bayern's going to have to show that that's not the case. They're going to be more physical. They're going to be more controlled. They should dominate possession more, again, being at Bayern. That tends to be the case. I think that the setting the tone won't necessarily be in the score. If you want to go out and win 3-0, yeah, that's going to say, hey, this is our league, back up. But really, they need to come in and just control the game. And that doesn't necessarily mean 3-0. It can be 2-1. But as long as they're clear of like, well, Leverkusen just scored their one opportunity, but we had 5 good opportunities. The other guy made a great save. But you need to put the pressure on them, really have them on their heels and tactically win. All those different things are what will be important to that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. After the way that they were kind of dismantled by Leverkusen last year, you got to just kind of not have that same feeling, I think, after that match. So let's go to Bayern. That's your club. That's the club you cover, the club you follow, obviously. Brought in a couple big transfers. Olise from Palace, 53 million euros. João Palhinha from Fulham, 51 million euros, defensive midfielder. Hiroki Ito, a center back, Japanese center back from Stuttgart, one of the rival clubs in the league there, 23.5 million. And then another familiar Premier League name, Eric Dier, on a free transfer. Some of the bigger losses, De Ligt, 45 million to United.
How big? Yeah, how big a loss are we talking about?
Yeah, right. In terms of like name, obviously. But how do you rate the transfer market? Is this going to kind of get them on the right path again? And then also Vincent Kompany's hiring as the manager, different direction. How do you feel about Bayern coming into this season?
You know, I feel a lot better about it than I did 2 months ago. really the different signing they brought in. You know, we tried to bring in Paulinho last summer. Tuchel really wanted him. He's like, hey, we don't have a number six. We need a number six. I want this guy. And they're like, okay, we'll get him. We'll get him. We'll get him, and kind of trudge through it. And we finally had a deal in place, but it was like the last day. So Fulham's like, well, if we can't buy anybody with it, we don't need 60 million pounds. We need a player who's going to dominate and keep us in the Premier League. And so they kind of got what they wanted out of it. But Paulinho has looked like he really wants to be here. He's a solid player. He's going to give you everything you want. You know, I think that's going to solidify how we play in the midfield and really take a lot of relief off of our center backs. And I'm not sure how much you guys watched last year, but we played the whole first half of the season pretty much with Upamecano and Minjae Kim as the center backs. And it went pretty well. Every now and then they would have some just boneheaded moves, especially Upamecano, where he played great for 85 minutes and then just completely take somebody out in the box or handball or something that's like, there was no reason to do that. Nobody's even around you. What are you doing? And so I think that there needs to be some sort of consistency there to figure that out. You know, you mentioned Michael Olise. He had a great Olympics with France. And quite frankly, I'm glad we bought him a couple months ago rather than today, because he probably would have cost us another 10 or 20 million because he had a fantastic summer. I think he's finally going to get some call-ups with France. He looks very smooth out there. He's very similar play to Sané, but he's a little more physical in terms of he doesn't really get bodied off the ball, but a very smooth player, very technically sound. I think if he can really get his feel for living in a different country in terms of where, I mean, he's French, but he's living in England. If he can figure out how to live in Germany and be happy there, man, he could be really good for the next 5 years. So he's a guy that I really want you guys to look at. Unfortunately, Ito, he got injured like his first preseason friendly with us. It was terrible. But, you know, a couple months, he's going to be there as good depth. He can also play outside back as left back. So that kind of gives a little versatility that I don't think people really thought of him, because he was at Stuttgart. He pretty much played in the center. And maybe the biggest thing that we got that didn't cost us anything was getting Josef Sanicic back from he was on line at Leverkusen. Or I'm sorry, on loan at Leverkusen last season. And man, we needed him. And having him back as a reliable right back means that Kimmich can play in the middle and be a little more aggressive there as possibly a number eight or wherever he plays, because he can play anywhere on the field. So we have quite a few guys coming in of pretty much positive stuff on coming in. It's hurting me. You saw me shaking my head when you said Dalit's name. I don't understand it. I don't know what the deal was. And I remember when Man U wanted him back when he was 18, going from Ajax to Juventus. They were like, well, I think he's going to have some weight problems. And you're like, he's 18. How could you possibly know that about his genetics? That makes no sense. And his exit from Juventus was kind of weird. His exit from Bayern was kind of weird. He didn't play for the Netherlands, even though he was on the roster for the entire Euros. Again, doesn't make sense to me. He's a solid player. I want him on my team. He's a great leader back there. He's very vocal. I think he's going to be great at Man U. He's going to be back with Erik ten Hag, who coached him at Ajax. So I don't understand it, other than they just, you know, something that hasn't been mentioned is that the new management team at Bayern was tasked with cutting their payroll by 25% this year. That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous thing to ask at Bayern when you have more money than everybody else in the league by like double. You know, last year, Leverkusen's top salary player was like 5 million a year. We had like 19 guys who were over that number, some stupid number of like, we could fill a team and a half and some players would still be over 5 million a year. So the point being is that it's weird that we're doing cost cutting moves. But you know, we don't see all those behind the scene things of why or what or how. I don't know. So hopefully our center backs can just be comfortable, and maybe they didn't like having somebody behind them and that just made them uncomfortable. But that's soccer at Bayern Munich. I don't get it. But Eric Dier was also a great find for us. He came on loan with us in January. We officially brought him on basically as a included transfer, because our loan fee basically just became a transfer fee. I don't know. It's a weird financial thing. But he was fantastic last year. He went like 500 minutes without being dribbled past, which like nobody else in Europe did that for any point in time during the year. And so even he had a great year. So I think we're doing a lot of the right things. And I think if we can put up 75 to 80 points, which I expect we'll do, we'll win the league and be back on top.
I'm curious what your opinion of Kompany is, because I think when we look at what he did in the Premier League last season, I think when we did our preview pod last year, we were very high in Burnley. We thought they were going to be like the team of the newly promoted teams. That's going to be potentially like a mid-table club. I know they lost a lot coming into the season from their championship to their Premier League season, but for them to finish 19th below Luton Town, you know, I think their defense suddenly conceded like 30 or 40 more goals than what they had previously in the championship, and obviously higher competition, but even still, like, it was a large gap. With Kompany moving over to to Bayern in the Bundesliga, do you have high expectations for him, or are you a little wary about can he perform as a manager in like the higher tiers of Europe?
So I have low expectations for him. However, I do that because he's the anti-Tuchel. He's literally the opposite in almost every way. He loves to play attacking, short passing soccer, right? Great. He's a player's manager where he wants to have so much communication that it's ad nauseum, where like, dude, stop talking to me. We don't have to have the conversation. It's 7:30 in the morning. I'm trying to put my shoes on. I think that that's going to be a burden because we have so many great players on our team who all want to be the alphas, right? And I think that they've been just strained under Tuchel for the past year, and the move never made sense in the first place, but I think that he is going to allow them the freedom to be who they want to be. In a place like Burnley, that doesn't really work. You don't really have the right players for that, and you know, the other part is tactically. I think that what he's shown so far is we're going to be pretty simple. We're going to play our 4-2-3-1 that everybody here likes, that everybody's grown up playing, they're used to. They're not having to think as much on the field. Stick Mueller in the middle if you want to, and just press high. And we'll, you know, we're going to control possession. We should be the best player at every position because we're Bayern, certainly as we go through the Bundesliga. And say if we're playing against maybe Madrid and Man City, that should still be the case. So I think that he is going to be a good fit because he is doing less. Is a weird way to answer that question, right? So I think that he's going to be a good way to allow the players to be the players and get the most out of them. I'm hoping to see guys like Mueller in his last season be rejuvenated. Hopefully he can offer some wisdom to Upamecano and Minjae Kim. And you know, think about when Rudiger was at Chelsea, right? He was just kind of in and out of the lineup under Tuchel. It didn't really make sense. Couldn't really figure it out. And then all of a sudden it just happened, right? Which has to be some sort of coaching. There's no way he just all of a sudden decided he realized he knew how to play soccer. And I think that we are hoping that Upamecano will do the same thing, where he will cut out the stupid mistakes and just be a freak athlete back there and just win every ball 30 yards away from goal and not worry about it. Maybe pick a few yellow cards, but they're smart fouls. Hopefully we can cut out the mistakes, and that'll allow us the freedom because we gave up just a crazy amount of goals last year. I don't have the number in front of me, but it's like,
oh, I do. Hold on.
Do you?
Hold
on. Oh my gosh. It was a crazy number.
45. Which is just goals. About double of Leverkusen.
Yeah, exactly. Dortmund 43, Leipzig 39. I mean, that was another part of Leverkusen, right? That didn't get scored on. But that was like a high number for us as well. So put all those things together. We're going to be better this year. We're not going to be light years better. We're not going to go undefeated. But we can certainly find somewhere between 75 to 80 points, and Leverkusen will drop off enough where that'll be enough.
So yeah, question, the follow-up question I have there. Sorry, Coach.
I was just going to say it's good for the league when it's more competitive, right? Like Bayern running away with the league. I know from a fan perspective, like it's nice to run away with it. But I guess for like an outside viewer, at least it draws some more attention to the league, I think.
So to follow up with Scotty's question, Pep leaves in 2016. You're now on your eighth manager since 2016. How long or how short is that leash? Like how long or how short do you want it to be? Is it win the league or bust? Is it make Champions League? I mean, that's obviously probably the minimum expectation, but I mean, at what point I can't wrap my head around it because I don't follow a club with such history and such expectations. If it goes 2 years in a row that you don't win the league, do you hit the panic button or do you give Kompany a little bit more time to start quote unquote his project? I need to understand your perspective on that.
Yeah, it's a great question because I always tell people like, hey, you want to pay me like $10 million a year to go get my ass kicked in the Bundesliga? I will happily drag that team into the ground, right?
Right.
Nobody gets hired to do the job and does that, but you know, the expectations are so weird because there's a few different hierarchies at Bayern. First, there's the board of directors with Uli Hoeneß, who's been there forever, and like he's always like, nobody talk to the media. I'm gonna hold a press conference and say exactly what I think. And then you pass that down to who answers to him of like, okay, now you have the board. You have the sporting director, Froon. You have Eberl, who just came over from Gladbach or Leipzig, wherever he came from. He's been around the cycle. And all those guys are like, yeah, we want to do things our way. Of course you do. You've been there for 6 months. Why wouldn't you? And then you have the coach who's like, hey, we're all going to work together, right? And it all sounds great in August. Everybody's going to win the league. But the second we don't win a game, even just a tie against a subpar team, which is everybody we play in the Bundesliga, according to the board, people panic, right? And so I think that best case scenario is that he is here for 2 to 3 years, and then we decide. And I'll tell you why. Because of the stat you threw out, like this is our eighth manager, right? And what they just found out this summer with company is nobody wants this job. Nobody wants to be on such a short leash. If you're an internationally renowned coach, you've been around the mark, you've been at the other big clubs, why would you take this job for a year? There's no reason to. So they literally have to show that they will give this guy at least 2 years, even if he loses. Now, hopefully he wins and it's not a problem and he just figures it out and he's here for 5 years, right? But they literally have to give this guy at least a year. Otherwise, the next guy's going to be even worse. You're going to pick some middle guy from like the middle of the Netherlands or, beg somebody to come back like, he's been here like four times. And so you have to. Otherwise, you're never going to convince anybody, player or coach, to come play for this team ever again. And then you go into this weird nosedive of like, well, we were a great club. And then you're where Man U and Chelsea are right now. Like, oh, we're doing great. And you finish fifth in the league. They can't afford to do that. They have to stay on top. And they have to give some sort of leeway and freedom to say, hey, we will support you even when it gets tough.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy, too, considering, you know, obviously they underachieved last year, and then to have the directive that you said this year of like, hey, we have to cut budget or cut our salary by 25%. Like that's and then to give it to a manager who just got relegated with his previous club in the different league, your expectations need to kind of align with like the scenarios that they've been given. And like, it's very hard for a manager to succeed giving those set of circumstances. So yeah, to your point, like you think if Vincent Kompany comes in and gets, you know, is competitive for the title, whether or not he wins it, I think that's, you know, regardless of the point, but if he gets to, you know, second place, third, whatever in the table, but they've been, you know, in the title chase through April, I think that's a pretty positive spin, even for a club like Bayern Munich, given the circumstances that they've had this summer.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think the big part about Tuchel too, is that he just played a very boring style. So if we didn't win 5-0, it was a painful game to watch. Mm-hmm. Even if it was 3-1 and we were never behind and we scored early, it just wasn't fun to watch. The fan base wasn't excited by it. And quite frankly, it looked like the game was out of control. And so I made the comment earlier about being in control of the game against Leverkusen makes a big difference, because that's saying, hey, this is how we're going to play and everybody else is going to have to deal with it. You know, I was a Dallas Cowboys fan growing up, and I always laugh because you knew what was going to happen on every single play and you still couldn't stop it. And if you want to be the team that everybody fears, that's what you have to do. We're going to try out this lineup every week. We're going to play this way. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. And they need to reassert that dominance if they want to take back this crown. Because it's not just about points. It's not just about winning the trophy. It's about reminding everybody that we won 11 years in a row because we're better than all of you combined. And they need to send that message early, often, and just make a habit of it where by March they're like, nah, y'all are in the title race. We're up by 20 points already. Even if it's only 5 points, it feels like 20 points.
It's so wild to me because you say all that and team still averaged over 3 goals a game, right? Like it's just, I'm looking at the raw numbers and it's just like,
yeah, the German record.
It's all about perspective, I guess.
Yeah. The German record is like 101 goals in a season and we scored 94 in a losing season. And it's like, guys, the offense isn't the problem, but everybody's mad about Tuchel because it's boring to watch, because a lot of the goals were just individual efforts. A ball got crossed in the cane or somebody made a run, or we're very good on set pieces. Kimmich gets an assist on like every 25 or 30 corners, which is funny because then he gets railed for not being good at corners. And you're like, guys, you gotta pick and choose. The numbers don't support what you're saying.
Yeah, that's like one every four games for like Bayern. You know, that's nuts.
It's crazy. And especially when you have big guys like Kim, you have Upamecano who scored a lot. Dyer's pretty good about it. Dalit was great, but he's gone. It's fine. but it's funny because a lot of the other guys, we don't have anybody up top who can score goals with their header. So I think what you're also going to see, we're going to see a lot more short corners and things like that, and be a little more creative. And you saw a little bit in the spring, but I think you're going to see even more of that this year, where we just play possession. You're like, we don't need to worry about set pieces. We'll be fine. Unless it's a direct shot on goal, we can, we'd rather pass around you and get tap-ins where everybody's celebrating. Everybody's pointing to everybody. It's like, oh, you made a great play and you made a better play, but I got the goal. So, you know, everything was hunky-dory.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how they rebound, with, given what you said, the additions, and obviously the, at the same time, cost-cutting on the payroll and things like that. So they're obviously a team that should have no problem finishing top four. Leverkusen, right now, the odds have Bayern at minus 200 to win the league, Leverkusen second at plus 275, and then it's long shots after that, Dortmund plus 1100, Leipzig plus 1400. But if we look past the title race, which will probably feature those two, the past couple of years, we had Union Berlin 2 years ago get into the top four, make Champions League last year, and then really fall off. Past year, it was Stuttgart who finished top four. They had a really strong season, and now they're going to have to play in the Champions League, which I expect will affect them, obviously, in the league, like usually does these newcomers to the Champions League. Do you see a side that can crack a top four that, you know, the odds say should be Bayern, Leverkusen, Dortmund, and Leipzig? Is there another surprise outfit that maybe could keep one of them out of the top five, or top four, rather?
I would be truly shocked if it doesn't finish Bayern, Dortmund, Leverkusen, Leipzig, 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't think anybody else is going to finish within 10, 15 points of top four. Besides Stuttgart, they'll probably finish between 50 and 60, but they're not going to be super close. If you were going to try to find that outside bet to find, you know, let's say that Leipzig stumbles for some reason, or Leverkusen gets a lot of injuries or whatever. I think Frankfurt's probably the best value play. They're playing in their Europa League, but they've shown the most of, like, they had a shot at it. Stuttgart lost a lot last season, which is really going to hurt them. They gave away their top scorer to Dortmund. They gave away, who's the other dude they lost? They gave away both of their center backs, one to Bayern and one to Dortmund. So, like, their core of the middle is just shot. They brought in Demi Rovic, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, from Augsburg. He'll be fine. He'll be their leading scorer, but he's not going to do what Guirassy did last year and score. I think he scored like 26 goals or something like that in the Bundesliga. I don't think you're going to see them be able to do that again and even sniff the top four. So I think it's going to be pretty runaway. Again, if you want a value play, probably Frankfurt. Just because they're dealing with a second year coach, they didn't really lose or gain a lot. So they're well positioned to be that team that, just because they all get a little bit better, and if they can stay healthy and play as a unit, that's probably your best value play. But like Freiburg, Hoffenheim, Union Berlin, I can't imagine that they would even sniff the top four. I think this is, we had a fun year last year with Leverkusen finishing first and Stuttgart finishing second. That was an albatross, and you will not see that again. This is going to be a correction year where the Giants remind everybody who they are.
Yeah, I definitely like that shout. They're sitting at plus 500 to make top four, and I think that's solid, right? They're a team that's hung around the last two or three years, been in Europe. They score a lot of goals. I feel like their defense isn't all that great. I have no idea if they brought in any reinforcements or not, but I'm trying to make a case for any other team, and I don't think I could look past Frankfurt at plus 500. I'm definitely with you there.
Yeah, I think that would be shocking. That would be shocking to me if anybody else got there. And again, that's a decent value play. It's not great, it's not terrible, but it's more than the other ones. You couldn't pay me. You can give me 20-1 odds and like convince me that was the case. But really, I mean, they didn't lose anything at Frankfurt, which is surprising, right? Usually, teams like that will have some guys like that. They lost Sebastian Rode. Okay, he was like, 45 years old? No, I'm just kidding. And the other guys are coming back. They were able to keep Hugo, I'm not going to try to pronounce this. They're good forward who was on loan from PSG. They basically made the loan permanent this month. So that was huge for them. I think that's going to make a big difference, and they're going to come back strong.
Oh, yeah. Ekite, how do you pronounce his name?
Take a shot at it. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, and they also brought in Teate, who I know Roma was linked with a couple other clubs from Stade Rennes here. I see a center back. Yeah, so, yeah, because I think also when you see Stuttgart only plus 200, like there's not enough value there to say they're going to be able to repeat again and get past these four clubs and get to the top four. I don't think it's worth a play there at plus 200. So, when we look at the rest of the league, relegation – we could just look at quick. I mean, if you look at the futures, teams to be relegated right now, Holstein Kiel, who I've never heard of before this season, obviously newcomers to the Bundesliga. St. Pauli plus 170 and Heidenheim at plus 220 are the favorites to get relegated, with Bochum pretty close at plus 250. Yeah. Are those three like the prime candidates? Do you think there's any value anywhere else, team that might fall off? Or
I do. So the value play here is Werder Bremen. They're at plus 550. I think they're going to finish like 16th, so they'll be right on the border there. I think that they're going to really struggle. They got a new coach. They've had some changes. It doesn't look good for them. They have a fourth year coach, but I think they're going to struggle. The other one is Bochum. I'm pronouncing that horribly, but they're also a good pick. I would stay away from the Holstein Kiel pick, and I'll tell you why. So they have the best odds to get relegated, right? In all fairness, they should be the ones. Do not touch that with a 10-foot pole. They are a scary good team. They've made some good runs. They made it to the semifinal of the German Cup last year. They knocked off Bayern.
Okay.
Knocked off Gladbach. They were that team.
The run, yep.
Okay. And it's they're one of those teams where, like, there's no reason. You look at everything on paper, that they shouldn't touch anybody, right? I misspoke there. They were the team who made the run in 2021, not 2024. I'll come back to that in a second. They made the run in 2021, and it's like, they've been playing so well. They've gotten back up a couple times. I think that they're going to stay up this time. Kind of third time's a charm sort of situation. So I think that's a pick you stay away from. The other one that's interesting down there is Heidenheim. I'm not sure why Heidenheim's that low. They finished like ninth last season. Yep. Their coach is the longest tenured guy in the Bundesliga. He's been with Heidenheim for 18 years. He's risen them for the third or fourth division and kind of worked their way up. I wouldn't bet on him losing to anybody ever. I'd stay away from that. So Bremen and Bochum are probably your two value picks there. You might get something. They're probably going to drop. I would stay away from everything else. Saarbrücken was the team that made the run last year. I'm sorry. They're in the second division now, I believe. But the point is I wouldn't touch those teams that have come up, because they're probably going to say, I don't think St. Pauli can stay. That seems unlikely, but the odds aren't really that great either at plus 170. They are probably the most likely to me to get relegated because they also lost some players. They brought in a new head coach. That's a recipe for disaster in the top league. They're going to go right back down.
Just one thing to note for anybody wondering, why these odds are like so drastically different from some of the other leagues we've already covered. It's only an 18 team league. Only two teams go down, right? Only two for promotion relegation instead of three, right? If I have that correctly, or do three go down and there's one that's a playoff?
There's two that are a playoff, actually. So three are technically relegated, but then I believe two of them get to go into a playoff. All three might actually get to go into the playoff. So like Bochum last year, I think they finished 16th. They did. They finished 16th, and then they went into the playoff. They got beat like 3-0 in the first leg and came back and scored a goal in like the last minute to push it into PKs and stay up. So that's another reason why I think they're gone. They fired their head coach and are like, we got to change something. So I think that they actually go down this year and don't win the playoff.
Yeah, and they were terrible last year. They gave up,
they were,
I think, the second most goals in the league. I remember I do another show, and my buddy Kenny was like pretty much fading them for like the entire season. Just made a ton of money. So
yeah,
plus 250 looks good to me.
Yeah, again, I think if you're really looking to the true value play, Bremen's a good one, just because 550 is pretty good odds for a team that has a decent shot of really going down. If you had to put two on me, I'd say St. Pauli and Bochum are going to be the teams that go down.
I was going to say, if you're between like St. Pauli or Heidenheim, might want to wait after this weekend because they play each other. And so if one of those teams wins, you might get a little bit better odds, even though substantially they're probably not going to have that much better of a chance of staying up, considering that they've just played at one of the easier clubs in the league. So if you like either of those two teams, maybe you wait, see if you can get a little bit of a number, if they can get 3 points on Sunday.
Yeah, that's a good point. And based on what Michael said, if Heidenheim's plus 240 on the road, you look at them maybe getting double chance, or draw no bet, maybe there's a value play there with you know, like he said, they were a decent side last year. They were in no danger of relegation. So plus 240 at a newly promoted St. Pauli side with a new manager might be a nice value play there for week one.
Yeah, Heidenheim's super interesting because they're actually the team from the Bundesliga who's going to be playing in the Conference League this year, which is wild to think about their run they've made up of. Like, that's really going to hurt them. They don't have the squad depth to truly handle that. It's going to hurt them in the Bundesliga and the Conference League unless they just decide we're not going to care about the Conference League. Yeah. We'll bring up whoever we can for that. But I have a feeling they're going to say, hey, no, we're going to be a real club. We're going to stay. And I think they're going to have the same pain that happened to Union Berlin last year, where they went to the Champions League and suffered for it on both sides. And it was, they finished like, what, 14th or 15th or something?
No.
15th. They were barely out of relegation zone. So they actually tied with Bochum with 33 points. So I think you're going to see a similar thing happen to Heidenheim this year.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were the Conference League representative. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah. So other futures just to look at, obviously there's not a ton available in the States here, but top goal scorer, Harry Kane, minus 230. Next guy is Gerassi, who was with Stuttgart last year. He said he moved to Dortmund, plus 800. Victor Boniface, plus 800. For Leverkusen, Openda, plus 800. Sesko, plus 1100. Like, these are long, long odds for top goal scorer. Is the only thing standing in the way of Harry Kane winning Golden Boot again just injury, long-term injury?
Absolutely, because he's the clear-cut number nine. There is no true other number nine at Bayern. So if he's healthy and he's going to play like he did last year, he's going to be sitting in front poaching those goals that I talked about earlier. So really the question is he going to be injured? And he has to be injured for a while too, because being out for a month is not going to be enough. He's going to score 30-plus goals. The other guys are going to have to go above and beyond. So really, Gerassi and Boniface at plus 800, I would probably take both of those guys, and basically you're playing 4-1 odds that either one of them will win over Kane. But yeah, there's a reason Kane's minus 230. It's not close.
Yeah, he had 36 last year. Gerassi, who had a hell of a season for Stuttgart, had 28. You know, like, he had a really, really good season. Openda 24. Like, these are solid goal scoring numbers in any of the top five leagues, and he still ran away with it by 8 goals. Like, yeah, that just speaks to his goal scoring quality in domestic leagues.
And he slowed down late, right? Because we were out of the chase, so they started resting him a little bit, and he was only getting 60, 70 minutes instead of 90, where you get some of those late tap-in goals. So it's even more likely that if we're competing for it late, that he's going to put up goals and challenge for Lewandowski's 41-goal record.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good point. And he wants that trophy, right? He wants to finally win a trophy.
He wants it so badly.
Coach, I was going to say, like, not that this is a fact by any means, but if you are a believer in narratives, because sometimes I like look at the narratives and I say, you know what, I'll take that as betting advice. The narrative that Harry Kane has not won a trophy yet, even comes to Bayern last season as almost like a shoe-in for trophy, still doesn't get it. The narrative around Bayern winning the Bundesliga this season, but Harry Kane being injured for most of the season, feels like it's a very true possibility. Like, it makes no sense. There's no facts behind it, but that's one of those like stories that if it were to happen, it seems like it would happen to Harry Kane.
Never so, beating the allegations.
To your point, like at that point, maybe you take a couple of these guys that are at plus 800 or longer, just kind of double stack them or triple stack them, and you have still plus money on it. And it's, the narrative would be like, hey, Harry Kane maybe hurts himself and he's out for 4 months, and you know, Bayern go undefeated during that run. And it's like, all right, Harry Kane won his trophy, but did he really win his trophy? Like, that feels very fitting given like the story of his career to this point at 31 years old.
He's 31. He has played more than 28 league games in the past 10 seasons. 10 seasons straight where he hasn't had a major injury. That's got to break eventually. And your 30s feel like the right amount of time for that to happen. And hopefully, I think that what's going to happen is I think they're going to rotate him a little more often. You know, companies said that he's going to rotate more. I don't know if that applies to Harry Kane, though, because if you don't want him dropping back a whole lot, then he just needs to poach the pop, need to have the right person. But I don't know. It seems unlikely that he's going to have the same run. I think in last season at Tottenham, he played all 38 games and started all 38. And like, God, that's got to hurt him eventually. He played at the Euros. They made it to the final. That guy's had less vacation time than we have. And that's not good for a guy who's 31. And I worry that he's finally going to try to push over the top and he's going to hurt himself and it's going to be horrible. And we're all going to feel guilty because we said it right here and we clearly jinxed him. I'm going to come back on this podcast and when it happens, be like, guys, it was y'all. It was y'all.
No, but we'll by have, calling we'll have it content. Out, it prevents it from happening. That's what you have. You have to speak it out so that way the universe knows you're onto its game and then it won't happen. That's how it usually works with this podcast.
Spoken like a Tottenham fan.
Go ahead, Nick.
No. I was just gonna just ask you, Mike. You know, any other general thoughts? Any other statements on the league as a whole? I mean, we're you know trying to look at this league from a betting angle, just very very high level because I'm nowhere near as where well versed as you are. You know, fun league to watch, as Steve had mentioned. A lot of goals, right? We talked about Bayern averaging 3 a game by themselves, just scored. A lot of these teams. I mean, so the team. Hoffenheim finished 7th. They had a 0 goal differential. Frankfurt finished 6th, had a +1. Everybody 8 through 18 had a negative goal differential. So I just like
crazy.
Overall thoughts, like, you know, we like to bet this league. I love to take overs. I love to take overs really early in the season because the lines are still somewhat favorable. I would say by like match day 6, the line goes from over 2.5 goals to over 3.5 goals and never looks back. But I feel like every game, man, 3, 4, 5 goals, doesn't matter who's playing, doesn't matter where it is. Am I correct in saying that? Am I completely off base? Just anything else you want to talk about in this league or any advice you can give to anybody who's looking to pick it up for the first time or maybe bet on it for the first time or, you know, obviously you're going to tell everybody root for Bayern, but is just anything anybody should be looking out for as the season's about to kick off.
Sure. I mean, you made a point about overs, right? 6 teams had double digit clean sheets last year. 5 of them tended to finish in the top 6. So the point being is if you're not a top team, you're probably not getting a shutout. That seems unlikely. Hoffenheim only had 2 clean sheets last year. 2, and they finished mid table. Augsburg only had 3. So you're seeing opening the games, and there's 2 reasons for that. Number one, if you're the better team, you attack, 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 and run a high press. If you're the underdog, you counterattack and counterattack and counterattack. Everybody attacks in some way, shape, or form, even if you're the underdog. Yeah, you might have some games where it's like 75-80% possession of one team. That's not usually the case. And so there are lots of opportunities for goals, and every team, even the lower ones, have guys who can finish 1-on-2, 1-on-3 opportunities. So if you're looking at 2 or 3 goals, you're probably going to go over that in any situation. You know, you get to 4 or 5, that's always kind of a hit or miss of like, you never know. I would pay attention to the weather a lot because, you know, by October, November, this is basically Canada up there, right? They're playing in the snow already. And some of these games where the snow is blowing directly into their face, those are lower scoring games. It sounds simplistic, but those games are really hard because the attackers literally can't see where they're going. Yeah. Those fields are sometimes good, sometimes not. So that also plays in when you get to like January, February, and there's no real breaks in the season. Those different types of things are good things to look at when you're trying to figure out, hey, should I bet on this game? But really pick your 3 or 4 teams that you really want to follow and study them and see how they compare to the other teams that they're playing against, and how they do against them historically. Because for the most part, they don't change their styles a whole lot. Their culture is what they do because most of the clubs are owned by people. They're not owned by corporations or things like that.
So
the Red Bull Leipzig, yeah, that's not a common thing. They have the weird ownership rule there. So they try to stay true to who they are and they play fun attacking football because of it. So that there's a lot of good thoughts there, but really just watch the league, appreciate it for what it is. Even if you're finding like 2 mid-table teams of Hoffenheim versus Freiburg, they're entertaining games. You know, sometimes you get some of these Premier League games or they're just slugfest, or certainly in La Liga where they spend half the time just on the floor writhing around and complaining to the refs and everything that everybody hates about soccer. You don't see that in the German league. Somebody goes for a dive. Somebody literally picks them up, whether it's their team or the other team or some fan, I don't know. And they get back up and they keep playing.
Yeah. I have to say it is entertaining. I started watching it more the last couple of years. Now that we look at lines with it and stuff, like if I'm just on the bike in the basement and I'll throw it on, if there's no Serie A match on that I want to watch it. And they're more entertaining a lot of the time than some of these other leagues, because they do. They attack, and they attack, and you get goals. And like Nick said, I think, Nick, early in the season last year was when we were able to hit some of those overs because they were still set 2.5 and and they were playable. Well, then they start to move to 3.5. Then you get that point where it's like iffy if they're going to get 4 or not because you get 2 ones or whatever. But it is entertaining. So I think the last thing before we let you go, Michael, any other signings we should keep an eye on in the league? Any players that jump out, either move clubs within the league or came from outside of the league that you have your eye on?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I certainly like to always follow the Americans in these leagues, right? So Gio Reyna's back at Dortmund. Kevin Paredes for Wolfsburg. He's a great young talent. He's only 21. He had a great Summer Olympics for the U.S., so I think that's another one. He's going to be out a little early with a foot injury, but I think he's going to be back after, like, that September international break. There's also a dude, Leonard Maloney, who's like one of those German-Americans, kind of like Jermaine Jones was. He plays for Heidenheim. I love Joe Scally, maybe because I'm a lefty, but you know, he plays for Gladbach. He's been there for a while. He's only 21, but he's been there like three, four seasons.
That's crazy.
Yeah, feels like he's older.
I mean, I remember him being at 18 and giving Bayern Munich fits. And we were like, what is happening? Who is this kid? Of like, he looks like he has no speed. He looks like he could be in a beer league in 10 years. And he's out here putting up a great performance. And so, you know, those are the Americans to look for. Really, Dortmund is the team who probably upgraded the most besides Bayern, because they brought in Anton from Stuttgart, Garrissi from Stuttgart as well. They lost Roos and Hummels. Those guys retired. Obviously, Roos just went to LA. Fulkrug went to West Ham. So those are kind of upgrades that younger guys there. You know, that obviously everything that Bayern does, they're going to add a lot of good people. Leverkusen add a couple of good pieces. Martin Terrier is kind of a French winger from Rennes. Alexi Garcia from Girona. They got another center back from Rennes. I'm not going to pronounce his name. Belosian, maybe. I can't pronounce his first name. It looks very French, though. And so there's a lot of good people over there. I would just kind of pick a team, maybe two or three that you like their colors, you like their fight song, I don't know, and just follow them throughout the season because you're going to get hooked very quickly. And one thing me and my friends do is we, you know, everybody talks about fantasy sports, right? Instead of picking players, we actually pick leagues and teams. So basically you get one team from the Premier League, French League, German League, Italian League, Spanish League, and then we also, you get like a Turkish League and Portuguese, and you're like, oh, that's so stupid, why would you ever do this? And then by like September you're like screaming at a Dutch game at like 9:30 on a Sunday afternoon or morning, and you're like, yeah, this is why I love sports. Let's do more of this. So I would just say, just pick somebody. It doesn't have to be a good team, win or lose. They're fun to watch, and you're going to see a lot of young talent, which is something that the German League does opposed to a lot of the other leagues, is they play a lot of young guys aged 18 to 23 much more than the other leagues do, because it's more of an attacking league, so they don't need as much veteran play. They are happy to play the young guys and let them move on, because they're all about the player and development, and they're like, you got to play, otherwise you're not going to develop. So those are kind of my final thoughts, but yeah, you know, just watch. That's the big takeaway.
Nick, that's like a novel concept in Italy, right? You have to play to develop, like 18.
Got
to
be about 24 before you see the field.
You got to be like a world beater to see the field before 23. It's crazy. Right. So we have to know, before we let you go, who's the Serie A side that you got stuck with this season?
Ooh, you know, it's hard to not like AC Milan.
Good choice. Chances FC. I had to carry the torch for you last week.
Yeah,
they generate a lot of offense, man.
They do. And you know, it's funny because the Italian league was always such a defense first league where like it was just a fight to get to 1-0, and then you just sit back on your heels and you stick nine guys in the box and the other guy flops at midfield and stays down for 10 minutes. And the Italian league's really gotten away from that, right? Yeah. Where they counterattack so much better than they used to. It's become a much more fun league. They brought in a lot of outside forwards who have really been like, no, we're not playing like that. Give me the ball. Let's go make something happen. You know, Lazio is super fun. Atalanta, obviously, coming off the Europa League win. You know, I would say if I probably had to pick a team this year, I'd probably go Atalanta. I followed them for a few years, but I also couldn't tell you like more than like three guys on their roster. So, but they have a good shade of blue, so we'll stick with that.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. As a Roma fan, they've been a started as a thorn in the side. Now they're a big obstacle, so they're a little annoying, but as an outsider who's just like getting into the league or following one club, they're a fun club to watch. I mean, they will have their weeks where they kind of like, you're like, how the hell they lose to that team or drop points to that team. But I mean, last week they put up 4 in their opener, which everybody else in Serie A is struggling to get by, like mid to relegation type sides. And they just came out flying. So yeah, they're fun.
I did watch Lazio on Sunday. They look good too. They were 3-1, and I think they could have had a few more too. So
that's
they look good early. Oh, it's definitely a trap. They've been on my.
Oh, they're losing this way. They're not winning.
That'd be
this
miserable.
Yeah, no. Don't worry.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on it.
All right, so Mike, before we let you go, just let the listeners know what you guys are doing over at Bavarian Football Works, Bavarian Podcast, and it's been great having you on. Great information for us that, you know, kind of casually follow the league.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here. This has been great. We're really getting Bavarian Podcast Works up and running. We now have a daily podcast, but we do a lot of game day stuff. There was a preview that dropped today for the game coming out, and then we also do a post-game thing like an hour after the game. We obviously do match awards and observations on game day. We do a lot of interviews that we pull from different things on Twitter and stuff like that from the players right after the game. So there's just an absurd amount of content, whether you're a stats guy, whether you just want to hear what the players say, whether you want to hear about all the drama, they call it FC Hollywood for Bayern, because I mean, they're all disjointed. So they'll all say anything to everybody all the time. There's always, the hidden leaks. Everybody jokes that it's Mueller because he's the only one who's been around that long. So we're doing a lot of cool stuff over there. We have like 30 or 40 writers on staff. Whoa. That are doing a lot of different things. Some guys do like these long-winded tactical analysis. That's really in depth, really good. Got some good graphs. So whatever you want, we have, and I've been doing it really well for a while. So come check it out or listen to the podcast if that's more your thing. And hopefully you guys can have me or somebody else from our staff on here soon. I love the Premier League and the Italian League as well, so I will certainly be following along. But good luck to your retrospective teams this season, and hopefully you don't switch mid-season, but we'll see.
Appreciate it, man. Thank
appreciate
you so
it.
Much
yeah, 30 on. 40 writers, man. I've got to talk to have Brent talk to SB Nation, because we got three at PSD talk to right now. Max
I mean easily, you're so. 1/10 the size, so that makes sense.
Does make sense. So no, Michael, great having you on. Thank you. And we definitely have to have one of you guys back on for one of the big Bayern matches later in the season.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
Have a good one.
Appreciate it.
All right. So that was definitely informative. Got a lot of great information on the Bundesliga. I already know one of my plays possibly for this this weekend in the Bundesliga. I think I might have.
Wait, hold on. Let's hear match. It because I'm scoping one out right now, and I want your thoughts. And my man Oaks is in the fucking chat, so I want Oaks' thoughts too.
Heidenheim getting the number they're getting. I'm looking for the draw no bet number here because I'm not going to take a money line plus 240, but draw no bet at newly promoted St. Pauli right now is plus 150. I really like that number on them considering where Ooh. They were last season.
Oaks is already against you. He said they ain't losing that game at home.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the logic, but I mean, it's a good number. And not All losing right. doesn't mean they can't draw and push either. So
fair.
Yeah, that's Dude. What we bet, to draw and push.
Good yeah, job, push. Well, I mean, that's it might not be like why I bet, but that seems to be the fucking result also, every goddamn game.
Heidenheim double chances, minus 145, too.
All right, there you go. I'll take that.
Yeah. Stuttgart, even money away at Freiburg.
I saw that, too. I was going to ask him about that, just if I'm a week one line. That does seem a little odd.
Right? Like, are they going to fucking handle business, or are they going to pull a AC Milan, Inter Milan, Tottenham?
Like, does Freiburg have some sort of, like, opening match, like, ceremony or, like, celebration where, like, the fans are going to come in, like, extra raucous? I don't know. But that does seem a little weird. The only thing I can think of is the away-home split on that one.
Yeah, don't know. Don't know.
Oaks
All right,
adamant,
Oaks doubling down.
Not losing this game.
He's got the caps. Caps lock right. is on.
Are they drawing it? Double chance, minus 145. I don't know.
It sounds like that's going to be Oak's lock of the week. So we'll keep track of that for this week.
We're going to have to keep an eye and report back next week. The Bundesliga is fun. I had fun betting it the last couple of years between Union 2 years ago and Stuttgart, and made those some of my locks. I got to look a little closer at this week's card.
Man, the one thing we didn't get to ask him is, Union went from your squad, right, making Champions League 2 years ago to 15. Finishing, like, goal differential away from relegation.
Yeah.
Like, pretty fucking wild. So, just saying.
Yeah, they fell off. The Champions League, it's tough when you're a club that hasn't had really much top flight experience like Union, and then you're also in the Champions League. To build that depth is tough. I mean, we've seen it.
Sure.
I'm worried about Bologna, right, for Serie A purposes this year, being able to hang long enough to not kill the coefficient, right?
They may not get a fucking point, quite honestly, with the way they
Bundesliga and Serie A benefited from doing well in Europe. And I don't know if Bologna is going to help that aspect this season. So we'll see. It is definitely tough. So Dortmund -150 home for Eintracht. I wish it was a little bit better. That's an attractive, you know, when you're getting them, if you get them closer to 130, that's not bad at home to open the season. But like the favorites, you can't touch the favorites on the money line. Yep. Leipzig -425 versus Bochum. I would look at their, I'm going to look at their team total right now, because that is one that they might be able to fly a little bit. You got to go to 2.5, but maybe it's
tough early in the year.
It's tough early in the year. So let's go back to the leagues that we focus on. Scotty, I know you had some Premier League plays that you really like, so let's give those out, and Nick and I can talk about a couple Serie A plays that we noticed as well.
Yeah, scrolling through, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of trap lines. You know, the match of the weekend is obviously going to be Aston Villa hosting Arsenal. Aston Villa had a great run last season. Arsenal, similar, but, you know, close to being a title favorite, or not title favorite, but title contender up until basically April. But seeing Aston Villa at home getting, you know, basically, I think their draw no bet line is let's see, where was it? Has it moved? Yeah, they're plus money, draw no bet. Or plus excuse me, double chance, +105. That's crazy to me. I mean, Arsenal looked fine in their opening match. I think they won 2-0. Saka did most of the heavy lifting, but they certainly didn't look like they were this, you know, again, going to be title contender, off and running, strong start to the season. They looked very much like they were in cruise control. Aston Villa obviously scored first in their opening match in like the first 5 minutes. Onana had a nice header in the box. Yeah. And then they kind of did nothing for...
We had to wait 80 minutes for our second goal.
30 or 40 minutes, they did basically nothing. I think they conceded in the first half. So they went into halftime like level. And they got the 2-1 win. But I have higher expectations for them. I think they'll bounce back from that, you know, win, but relatively uninspiring performance. And they get the home game, right? This is their home opener. Yeah. So them double chance against Arsenal. I get that Arsenal have played well against them in recent history, but... this certainly feels like one for Aston Villa to kind of make a statement and be like, yeah, no, we're not just going to fade away, you know, and be a you know, mid-table club again this season. We're going to continue to challenge for the top four, and we have the players to do it. Ollie Watkins, I think, had a pretty mediocre game last week. I think he has a pretty good chance of scoring this week. Okay. So I do like that bet a lot. It's not my lock, though.
My lock. I mean,
go ahead.
Before you even get to it, just my thoughts on the game. Like, this game tells me everything I need to know about Arsenal. Are they title contenders? They win this game.
Ooh.
If they, no, seriously.
Are you going to really rule them out after week two if they lose this game?
Yeah, I kind of am. Not from a points perspective, like three points this early in the season, 2 points, 1 point.
They'll have to prove it to you to get back into title contention.
To me, this is a game you go out away from home. Week two, this is not the ideal scenario for Arsenal. You need to win this game. Like, you just have to. Like, mentally, I feel like that. I don't know. I get in my head a little bit, but like, to me, this tells me a lot about this Arsenal side. You're talking about it from a Villa perspective. This tells me everything I need to know about Arsenal week two.
Yeah, fair. All right.
It's a tough match my lock. For them.
Really tough.
Yeah.
Sorry, Scotty.
No, I was gonna say, yeah, it's a tough match. My lock for this week, I'm actually gonna go against the team I bet against last week. So Aston Villa played West Ham. I took Aston Villa team total over 1.5. I think Lopetegui, as does West Ham team, much improved already this early in the season. Obviously, David Moyes not hard to improve upon, and West Ham did have a decent amount of talent coming into the season, but you know, they conceded early against Aston Villa, but you get rid of that. I don't want to call it an aberration, but you get rid of that early goal, and West Ham almost was the better team for the first 60 minutes. So I'm going to go ahead and take West Ham double chance. It's -135. It's actually plus half a goal. West Ham plus half a goal at Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace lost to a Brentford team right now that's +850 against Liverpool without Ivan Toney. I get Crystal Palace is like that Jekyll and Hyde club that we talk about every season where they have good performances and then bad performances. And you can't really expect one thing from them week to week. But I think West Ham are a better team than maybe they're getting odds on this early in the season with Lopetegui in charge. So I like them double chance getting some result here at -135. Super, you know, it's not the greatest number, but as far as a lock goes, it's right in that range, and I just can't see West Ham leaving this without a point at the very least.
Scotty, so I'm so with you. I thought West Ham played pretty well last week. Palace, did lose, but that unfortunately probably for us means they're going to win this week because that's what fucking Palace does. True. But I too have West Ham. I have them plus a quarter of a goal on the Asian line, minus 110. If you want a little bit of a better number and you think they could win or draw, those are the two plays. I'm with you 100%. One of the games I circled.
And then
yeah, I actually bet Palace draw no bet last week and they cost me a unit last week. So,
well, what are you going to do? The other game I kind of have circled here. Newcastle is plus 120 on the money line going to Bournemouth. Mm. Bournemouth don't really have their replacement yet in for Solanke in the squad. I don't know that they're going to be that strong of a side this season. But Newcastle should be winning this game if they're going to be considered, like you said, Nick, if Arsenal want to be considered a title contender, if Newcastle want to be considered a top four contender,
yes,
winning away at Bournemouth this early in the season has to happen. You cannot have these early questions in August by losing or drawing to Bournemouth. I don't care if you're on the road. Yes. So then plus 120, I think that's a crazy number. I would love that number if it was like plus 100, because then I feel like it'd be more in line. The fact that it's plus 120 is scaring me off a little bit. So that's why I can't make it my lock. Nope. But I do love it. I think if you're looking to take a little bit of a long shot or something that's plus money, I don't think you'll be hard pressed to find something better than that in the Premier League this weekend.
Yeah, I think too, they showed some balls last week, right? Like they won that match down a man. Joelinton scored in the 45th minute. I know it was only Southampton, they were home, but when Char gets a red card as early as he did in the first half and then they're playing down a man, I thought they were in deep trouble, right? And then
unjust
they
red
go.
Card too. Yeah. I'll say that for any Newcastle fans watching. Unjust.
Absolutely. Gucci, we're talking to you, dude. Where are you at in the chat?
And then they go out there and get the result. That's a big 3 points. So they should have some good feeling heading into this one too.
Dude, so that's why I wore my Newcastle jersey today, because this, like, to me is the game in the Premier League where I just don't understand why this line is at where it is. Does scare me a little bit. Newcastle money line plus 120. Love it. Like, in on it. Absolutely true. With you, Scotty. And Sinisterra is a fucking beast.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw anything else in the Premier League, but those were like the ones that like stood out to me.
You guys aren't going to like it. Nobody's going to like it, but I'm going to talk about it. I think Man United, draw no bet, or
just looking at it.
Man United plus a quarter of a goal.
I would almost go the other way.
To Brighton. I think United's getting a little bit of value here. They did not look good last week, obviously. But I just don't believe in Brighton yet. I don't think Brighton's that good. And I think this screams a game that United just ekes out a win.
I don't know. I think, I get it. It was against Everton, right? And we thought Everton were going to have a little bit better of a showing than what they had.
It was dead wrong on that game.
The thing about Brighton is I think we forget how unhealthy they were in the second half of the season, how injured they were. Mitoma is an unbelievable winger, and I think he missed pretty much every game since February on, and he looked great against Everton. This new kid Minte that they got from Newcastle looks like a great pairing on the opposite wing. I think they're gonna create lots of chances. The only thing that concerns me is they're out here starting Danny Welbeck and James Milner, which would be fine if the year was 2014, but it's not. It's 2024, and those guys are both well into their 30s. I think they probably have close to 40 years of Premier League experience between the two. So that's the only thing that concerns me a little bit, but given that's week two and their legs should still be pretty fresh, I think that's a fine, pretty strong lineup. And yeah, United, we know they're gonna be wasteful with their chances. Brighton at home should get you at least a goal. I think if they get two, they're not losing, right? I don't see United getting three in this one. So I don't know. I do like Brighton draw no better or pick them around minus 120. I think that is a decent value.
What do you think about the over three in this one? Because the over 2.5 is minus 180. Over three is minus 115.
Yeah.
You see goals.
United has now played two games and had 3 goals total in those games. Not them, like just in total goals.
General, yeah.
I don't know.
And United's goal was an 86th minute winner from Xerxes. That was kind of just like I don't want to call it like a
mistake.
Weird touch, but it just found its way in. Like it wasn't exactly a great finish. So I'm not betting on United to get a lot of goals. At least early on in the season, if they can start to figure things out and they find a guy that can convert for them up top pretty regularly, then great. But as of today, like I'm not betting on United scoring, more than a goal a game, in the near future.
Yeah. Cool. Again, point I'm trying to make, I just don't yet believe in Brighton. They have another chance to prove me wrong with, you know, if they come out and win this game, win it by two goals. I'm okay. Well, now Brighton, maybe I was wrong, but I don't believe in them yet.
Yeah.
All right. Oaks has Forest draw no bet plus 105 at Southampton. How do you feel about that one?
I also like that, but it goes against my mantra of newly promoted sides getting a crazy bump in their home opener. For whatever reason, they seem to have that home opener bump. Didn't happen for Ipswich against Liverpool, thank God. But usually you'll see one of these teams come out and make a statement in their home opener, especially a club like Southampton who have experience in the Premier League. They're probably pretty relieved to be back. So I do like it. I looked at it as one of my like picks that I liked, but I stayed away from it just because there's that like crazy, you know, thing that you can't really account for in terms of a home atmosphere for a newly promoted club.
Fair.
All right. Anything else in the Premier League before we jump over to Serie A?
No.
All right. So, Nick, what was the first one we talked about today? I mean, this one jumped right out at both of us.
Oh.
The team that flew last week. It was the team we mentioned with Michael before, Atalanta at Torino. The number jumped right out at me.
Yeah, I don't know why I can't see it here. What they are plus 135 on the money line, which seems absolutely ridiculous to me. Team total over 1.5 goals. They scored 4 last week, plus 140, I think is nuts. Milan scored 2 goals on this Torino team in like 8 minutes. So yeah,
this isn't the same defensive Torino side of last year with Juric in charge and Buongiorno in the back. Team totals in play here. I might even like that better than the money line bet.
Very mismatched lines as far as I'm concerned. I don't think Atalanta's due for a letdown just yet. I think they absolutely smoke in this game. I don't care where it's played.
And they're buying one of Torino's best players. So Bellanova will be switching sides this week. I don't know how much he'll play for Atalanta, but he won't be playing for Torino in the back, at right back.
Is this just an overreaction to the fact that they drew Milan in their opening match? Like, obviously Milan has a high ceiling for the season.
Could be. Like, they were a solid mid-table side the last 2 years, and they were good defensively, but this is a different type of side.
Yeah, I could see both teams to score coming in. Oaks is on that. Torino did score 2 goals off of what, like 2 chances, right? But I think Zapata's still a threat. You know, they have people to look for in the box. They're a big team going forward, so wouldn't shock me. I don't think
Retegi plus 200 anytime goal scorer is a pretty solid number on him. He's coming off a brace.
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. And he's going to be the man, right? Obviously, Scamacca's hurt. He's not playing, I don't know, at all this year. Lookman looks like he's on his way out. I don't know. Either way, till that's resolved, I don't imagine he's in the lineup. So he's going to be the guy for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a bad number on him. The team total might be the one, though. I really like that team total.
I just can't make sense of that line. Yeah. I mean, I took a lot of team totals for Atalanta last year. They were typically minus 110, minus 120, even money. Never really saw them at plus 140.
Yeah. Another one I like is Milan getting minus 3/4 of a goal at Parma because the money line was at minus 145 last I looked.
So just on the edge.
On the edge. If it comes down a little bit, I'd take a money line. It's actually, if you can get a minus half a goal, minus 140, it's getting a little closer, but minus 3/4 of goal, minus 110. I think they bounce back against Parma. You know, Parma definitely threw Fiorentina. No, it's their first match at home back in Serie A, but I just think Milan is due for a bounce back after last week.
Yeah, listen, Parma looked good last week. We had Martino on. He highlighted them. I think he had them double chance or something like that. So good on them. Good result. Milan with an absolute stinker of a performance for 75 minutes, right? They salvaged a point out of that game. Can't see them doing it again. News out of the team, though, Morata is hurt. He's going to miss, I think, a month, which is definitely tough for your brand new signing, especially a guy who comes in the 70th minute and scores a goal or whenever he came in. So they're going to need it from elsewhere, but I'd be shocked if they don't take care of Parma.
Yeah, I would be too. And at minus 3/4 of a goal, you're at least getting half a cash if they win by a goal. So getting a little something out of it, which is why I don't mind that too much at minus 110. What do you think about Inter? I was looking at them on the spread just because I feel like they put up such a stinker last week. That first match at home against a Lecce side that just mailed 4-2.
This is so funny to me. Like, I don't know if it's the fact that like we've been doing this together now for quite some time, or that we talk to each other all day, every day. Like, the Scotty ran through the Premier League, you're running through Serie A right now. Like, it, literally, if I go through my phone, these are all the same exact bets that I highlighted.
And the only ones we shared were the Atalanta ones, and I sent you the Milan one. We didn't even talk about this one.
I'm not saying it's a lock. I'm not saying to bet it, but I see Inter coming out. Over 2.5 goals for Inter is even money. I kind of have a feeling that they roll in this. I'm not saying it's not great betting advice, not a great number. I'd like to see this like plus 150, but would not shock me to see them come out and score 3 goals.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. That's why I was looking at minus goal in 3/4 was a solid number. I think it was minus 110 or so. I just flipped pages. But if you're going to go Inter to get 3, you might as well even look at Inter to win it over. Over winning over 2.5 is only -145. Forget it. I thought it'd be a little bit better number than that. Team total is a better number, so scratch that. But yeah, I think either them scoring 3 goals or them minus a goal in 3/4 or so at -125 is solid, because I think they win this by at least 2 goals at home. I think they're going to be fired up. There's no way.
Like, you want to do something silly, take an Inter and a Milan parlay. It's even money. I don't know. Like, try to cut that edge down a little bit. I'd be really shocked if both of those teams don't take 3 points. Not to say that it can't happen. It happened last week, but I'd be shocked 2 weeks in a row.
If you guys want to talk stinkers, can we talk Napoli for a second?
I was gonna because, go there too. That's one like
Bologna half a goal is -110 at Napoli.
Yep.
I mean, did anybody have a worse opening match than Napoli last week?
No, they didn't.
Nick, I think you have Conte as being first coach fired in Serie A this season.
Is that definitely do. Or I'm not fired, but just he may walk out on his own.
He just may not want to do it. Yeah.
First opening in Serie A will be at Napoli, according to Nick.
Yeah. Listen, I wouldn't be mad if somebody took them to win this game. We have to see it first. I'm not personally taking Napoli to win, but like, gotta get a response. I don't know. Like, I don't see how you don't pull something. I hope not.
Teams in recent years don't have that.
I hope not.
Trend that they're very happy to just like not show up for him.
And their transfer market's still getting sorted. Like, they're not going to have a new number 9 in by this weekend. That's going to be able to start and play. Like, Bologna got a better result than I expected last week. I will say that, because I didn't think they'd show up too much.
This is like a both teams to score type game. Like, Napoli has to score a goal.
If Napoli they got
to
score. How can they get shut out two weeks in a row?
It's -135 both teams to score, which is a bit shorter than -110 for Bologna double chance or plus half a goal.
I don't know. Just thinking, Kvara's hurt apparently, so that's not good. Simeone fucking stinks. Raspadori is the worst player on the team. I guess this means Politano's in the starting lineup.
Gotta be.
I don't know. Now, you might be talking me into fucking Bologna here, but just because they're probably not going to give much up.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch the match with Udinese. I did have Udinese double chance, which ended up cashing and a 1-1 draw, but you look at the numbers, man. Bologna had 74% possession, XG of 3.25. They dominated the match. It was a miracle that Udinese got anything out of it. Oaks is giving out that same plus half a goal play that we just talked about, Scotty. I think, to me, that might be the play. Legs is asking about the double chance number. I don't know what the number is. I got to take a quick look. I don't know if it's worth the play or not.
Same thing, right? Same exact bet. So
same bet pretty much. I don't know which one has a better number right now, but yeah, I'm kind of feeling Bologna this weekend, just because I don't know if I can trust Napoli.
No.
Double chance, -115. Yeah, like,
what in recent history has given you any reason to trust them? It certainly wasn't any of their play in the second half of last season. It certainly hasn't been how they started this season and anything off the field.
I'm
going
to say this right now. If Napoli like lose this game or don't win this game, we have to get a Napoli guest on next week and just have a state of emergency pod.
I mean, 3-0 at Hellas is... That's not like awful. Slipping up. That's
is the worst, the worst fucking team there is. Yeah. Dude. Like,
Nick's strategy of fade Hellas all season is now 0-1 thanks to Napoli.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I had Napoli last week.
Yeah. Looked good in the Coppa Italia 2 weeks ago, but did not look good last week at all.
Fuck.
Just to wrap on Serie A and finish things up here, you talked about your Lazio side kind of smoke and mirrors last week. You thought a little bit about a bit against Venezia.
Yeah, listen, they look good. They should fucking smoke Venezia. I like both teams score in this one, minus 105. I certainly think Lazio score, but they gave up a goal to Venezia. It wouldn't shock me to see Udinese get a goal. I think minus 105 for both teams to score is good.
I'll tell you the value play here. It's draw at plus 200.
Right. I mean, Udinese draws every fucking game.
It feels like a draw game
in my life. Draw plus 200, I would take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Excuse me. We gave that out last week when we said Bologna and Udinese both draw every single week.
Cash.
I mean, do they have a fucking big number for double chance? I wouldn't put it past them.
Udinese or Lazio?
Udinese.
Yeah, Udinese plus half a goal is minus 160.
Yeah, never mind.
Nothing great.
Yeah, I like both teams to score in that one. I think that could come in. I like both teams to score in Cagliari against Como. I just think that's like one of those games where both of those teams are going to be going for it. It's minus 135. Yeah. Don't know that I'm going to bet it, but I think it's I think that's live. And I think over 2.25 goals, Monza against Genoa, minus 115. I think that game gets to 3. Monza needs to get off the hump, and Genoa scored 2 goals against Inter. So I think both of those teams get a goal. I think there's a 2-1 winner in that game.
I shouted Inter clean sheet last week on this show, by the way. And that did not look good very quickly. Team totals, I looked at Fiorentina, but it's way too big of a number at over 1.5. It's minus 185. I was thinking maybe they could get a couple.
Fuck that.
Yeah. That's what I like the other shout you had there. Juve, what do you think of Juve team total over 1.5 against Hellas?
Yes, I don't even care what the number is. Absolutely, it's Hellas. There's no way. Come on.
Hellas is due for a letdown. Juve look decent against Como. I mean, they put up a couple goals. I could see them putting up 2.
What is it? What's the number?
It's minus 115.
Minus 115.
Yeah, absolutely,
All right.
Thiago Motta, man, the greatest manager on the planet. Don't you know they're winning Champions League? They're going to win the league.
They're winning everything. They're going to win everything with him.
No, wait, hold on. Oaks does not agree with me.
He does not agree.
Damn, Oaks, I'm going to send you the link, bro. Come on and tell us why.
So what were your 2 locks, by the way? Did you guys each have one?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we could decide on that. I don't know. I just kind of vibing with what you guys said. Anything that we agreed on to me is a lock.
Yeah, I'd say the Atalanta team total I like. Probably that. I'd say the Milan Bologna. Plus. I would lock in Milan Bologna over Bologna.
Okay.
As a lock, I'd say the Milan plus what was it? Plus quarter goal or minus a quarter goal, rather, whatever, 3/4 of a goal. I kind of like that better because it gives you the option for that half cash at least.
All right.
I know we've changed the lock format a little bit, but I would say one of those 2. Trying to quickly go through anytime goal scores before we wrap.
Well, let the record state anything. My lock is West Ham plus half a goal. I guess.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I like Newcastle as like maybe my other play, man. Newcastle plus 120.
All right. Looks like Oaks needs to get food, so we're going to have to wrap things up just so that he doesn't starve himself.
Yeah, so we'll end it here. Thanks again to Michael Scott.
Coach, is that the new Roma kit you're rocking? That's this year's kit?
Just waiting for that question.
I got a Fanatics promo code, and it took off on this, which I usually don't take off this early in the season, so I pulled the trigger. I haven't bought one in a couple seasons. I didn't like the New Balance stuff, and I didn't like last year's Adidas either, so I picked it up. Right now, as you can see, it's blank on the back because I can't trust anybody's going to be on the club long enough.
Ain't going to be Dybala.
Who I already have, so it might just stay blank so I could wear it for a longer time.
Could be a Memphis kit.
No, God.
Ooh, Depay on the back?
Yeah, it could be.
Now I would have to say Memphis. He puts Memphis in the back of his shirt all the time. Right.
Yeah.
Then people in the U.S. will probably just think I'm repping the city or something. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we thank Michael Scott for coming on Bavarian Football Works, Bavarian Podcast Works. They're doing a lot of great stuff over there on SB Nation, one of our sister sites for Chiesa Totti. Next week is going to be a big weekend in Serie A action, so we will look to get a Serie A guest on, 3 big head-to-heads. We thank you guys for listening. Give us a follow on YouTube. We'll drop possibly some more plays on there, and catch you guys next week.
Yeah, wait, and shout out our guys at 2 Foot Talk.